Hello and welcome to We Heard Wonders, the music podcast that urges you to dance yourself clean.
What about the top?
I thought we prepared that you were going to ask me if I was any good at dancing. You didn't do it.
That felt too obvious.
Are you any good at dancing?
I enjoy dancing. I don't know if I'm any good at it, but yeah, certainly enjoyed throwing some shapes back in the day.
Yeah, me too.
Not least the LCD sound system, actually.
Ah, yes. Who are we going to be talking about this very day? I am genuinely a terrible, terrible dancer. On Fiddy, I shared that story of Sam, the keyboard player in Deadline Shakes, from a while back when we played the launch gig for our first album, and I was just like an electrified lizard, I think, just gyrating everywhere. Once it gets in me, I can't stop but let it all out. So why don't we introduce ourselves? Why don't we?
Yeah, my name's Andrew. Thank you. My name's Andrew. I buy records and write about them on Instagram at KidDGH86.
And for music lovers, Andrew's Instagram is wonderful, so you should go and give it a follow. I'm Ian. I'm a member of Glasgow band The Deadline Shakes. And you can find us on all the social media places at Deadline Shakes. So that's us introduced ourselves. And I was wondering if you would indulge me, Andrew, that I might tell our lovely listeners about my latest musical venture.
Yes, this is very exciting. You've been teasing it for a few weeks and now all can be revealed.
All can be revealed. Very exciting. Well, it's one of those deals where, you know, you want to just... Like, I've obviously known what's been going on for a little bit and I've sort of hinted a few things, told you about a few things as well. But, like, you have to sort of wait till everything's kind of in its right place before you can actually say anything. So on 1st of October, we lifted our own self-imposed embargo and we let the world know that we are releasing our second record, Documentaries, on Friday the 25th of November 2022. And it'll be a digital-only release and it's going to be preceded by a single, which we played on podcast Fiddy, which is where it got its world first airing. So that's going to be called Ditching of the Roses. So I'm absolutely, like, I'm sort of amazed that we've actually, like, we've got it out eventually. Like, the wee tag phrase that we've been using on our social media posts about it is no mucking about, which I think is a sort of nice...
I thought that was a little bit ironic.
A wee gag. You know, it's 7 years since the last one. So, I don't know. There's been some mucking about, I would have to say, but we got there with it. So I'm delighted with it. I love the record. I've loved it. Yeah, I love making it, but we've been beavering away on it for a long time, and now it's ready to be, you know, birthed properly.
Yeah, fantastic. I've been lucky enough to hear it a few times as well, and yeah, very vibrant, very fun. Lots of great songwriting, great hooks, great tunes. Lots for people to get delved into.
And specifically, what about the guitar playing, Andrew? What do you think about the guitar playing? Is that right?
Passable.
thanks for those kind words, man. I really appreciate it. I think, like, the whole thing of being in a band anyway, when you're in your 30s and everyone's got kids and jobs and all that sort of stuff, unless you're doing it like full time, the whole thing is a labor of love. Like, it really is. Yeah. It's a hobby. It's not dissimilar to doing a podcast, actually, in a lot of ways. But in some ways, podcasting is very, very immediate.
Yeah.
Like, we just do it and then it's out and then that's it. And, you know, and it's for better or worse. Whereas with a piece of music, it takes you can do it quickly, but we tend to, you know, ruminate over things and try and get things, a certain way. So we've got a bunch of things we've got lined up for this. One of the things that stopped us from talking about it was we've got a few things lined up to kind of promote the release of the record. So I'll have more to talk about in coming weeks. But I guess the main thing I would say to folk, if they're interested and want to listen, if you make your way to our Bandcamp, which you just simply go to Bandcamp and then search The Deadline Shakes, You'll find our page there, and it's got you can listen to a track immediately if you pre-order the records. So there's another track, not Diction of the Roses, but another new track on there. That's a really funky, fun dance song, so I'll let everyone go and have a listen to that. Basically, we're really hoping that we can get a lot of people to hear this record and propel us into 2023 with something to kind of live up to. It's self-release, so we've come up with our own label to release it on as well, called Sir Sherry Records. And it's just another little aspect of seeing what it's like to actually be a part of the music industry, no matter how big or small. Like we love doing it. So it's brilliant to be releasing a single, releasing an album, and I'm super proud of it. So there we go. Gushing. Excellent. Gushing ends. End of gush.
Love it. One more question, like who's going to be involved in terms of the running of the label? Is it going to be one person that's going to be kind of doing a lot of the paperwork and making the calls and that kind of thing, or is it a shared experience?
It'll be a shared experience. It's I think label at the moment is probably quite a highfalutin term it's just kind of like the organisational structure of us having a methodology to put this out.
Yeah.
But we have talked amongst ourselves about doing, maybe doing some solo music on, you know, one person doing something and having a means to get it out and having a little methodology for getting it out. We're not doing it alone. We've got some industry folk working with us to help us in the background, to do some PR for us and things as well. So there's that. So it's not just a total like splash in the dark. I mean, we've really, really carefully over a long period of time thought about this. One of the links between the podcast and the record actually is Martin, who's the bass player in the band, who's an incredibly talented graphic designer, who designed the podcast logo in its various iterations, for which we paid him precisely $0. So thank you so much for that, Martin. I really appreciate it. but you've got all these podcasts to listen to, so there we go. But hit Martin's artwork on all our like social media and all our the record art itself, the single art for Diction of the Roses, it's all just absolutely fantastic stuff. So I do think we're presenting we've got new band imagery on social media, we've got new like video material or piecing together, and we've got the new music as well. So it's the full works. So yeah, it's exciting.
Definitely, definitely.
Exciting stuff.
So best of luck with it.
Thank you. I'm sure until the 25th of November, pretty much I'll just be updating people every week on running and getting out of this. It's kind of cool to have a music podcast to actually talk about it on as well. And kind of document it a little bit. I mean, I don't want to lay it on too thick because folk have come here to listen to a new music review, so we'll get to that in a second. But it is cool to be able to have something to, you know, kind of keep track of the progress and successes as they come, hopefully. So yeah,
totally. Yeah, because I mean, I remember when we started the podcast, you were kind of maybe suggesting that, you know, it might never come out at one stage, and that was a possibility. It's brilliant that it's just all come together.
We just didn't know. I mean, the label that we were on before, Flowers in the Dustbin, was like a cottage industry. You know, it was basically one guy and family members that were running that label. And he had a number of artists as well. Stephen, like a fantastically enthusiastic, passionate, you know, wasn't in it for cash, wasn't in it for any of that sort of stuff. Just if he put something on his label, it was because he really loved the music. So, you know, we're eternally grateful for him taking it seriously in the first place. And without him, you know, way back in a decade ago, we probably never have released music ever, to be honest. But this time around, we just had a sort of different, you know, idea about how we wanted to do things. And we were looking for another label. And ultimately, we just delighted on the idea that, why, you know, let's not go with a middleman. Let's just do it ourselves. I was really inspired by talking to Johnny from Pictish Trail way back. When was that? I don't even know when that was. A few months ago.
Yeah, it would have been right at the start of the year, really.
Yeah.
Like February or something.
Yeah, his label and his approach to doing things, I found personally quite inspirational. And I just thought he had like a really like nice sort of sense of, like, he takes it seriously, but at the same time wears it really lightly and doesn't kind of, you know, overemphasize how important it all is to him. But as soon as we started chatting to him about music, you know, you could tell there was a real passion there. So I think that's kind of similar to us. Like, we really do take it seriously. We want the best for it, you know, but we have it in its place. So I'm so proud that it's finally getting its airing. I just think, I'm biased, obviously, but I think that the songwriting on this record, of which I've done practically none, so I can talk about it, is fantastic. Greg, who writes the songs, I just consider him a genius. I've been listening to him write music for my entire adult life and a good portion of my teenage years, and I'm convinced that it's just stunning. And we just want as many folk to hear it as possible. And again, for us, it's not really a money thing. You know, in fact, it's not a money thing at all. It's just about doing cool stuff, and we're pals, so it's about having a shared hobby, just like us, Andrew.
Absolutely, yep.
That's a passion project.
And if enough people listen to it, then maybe we might get a vinyl edition as well.
We would absolutely love that. I mean, if it weren't for the... I keep meaning to move on and keep talking about this because I'm so excited about it. If it weren't for the big, massive vinyl delay, we might have done a vinyl release for this record, to be honest. It's just... We have pushed back so long. The idea of then saying, okay, we'll release it mid-2023 just seemed too much. We're ready now, so here we go. Here we effing go. All right, so shall we drag ourselves kicking and screaming onto some new music today?
Yes, let's. So we've got some new music to review from LCD Sound System. Run, Logan, Run. And Polyphia?
You nearly said Polyfilla, didn't you?
I very nearly did. We did a lot of DIY recently. Yeah. Polyphia it is.
Yeah, Polyphia, yeah, cool. So just three short tracks this week, and I will apologise in advance for that. That is my fault. I am ludicrously busy. I can't even say it's even with band relief and stuff. It's not. Just life has taken over a little bit this week, so we're making sure we get a... hopefully a nice podcast out this week, even in spite of that. So yeah. And you know what, Andrew? I bet you there are people listening to this podcast right now and they're thinking to themselves, are there ways that I can support this amazing podcast?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can they?
They can. They actually can. They really can. It's fantastic. The main way that they can do it is they can just interact with the podcast, listen to it, chat to us, send us messages on social media, like our posts, all that good stuff. Listening to it obviously being top priority. But if you want to contribute financially to the podcast, you're more than welcome to. We've got a Buy Me A Coffee website, so www.buymeacoffee.com/WeHeardWonders. And if you love the podcast, you can send us a couple of coffees and we just put that towards the ongoing running costs of our podcast. And I believe we received a wee coffee from one of your pals this week. Is that right, Andrew?
We did, yeah. We got a coffee from Gordon, my good friend, and a real avid listener to the podcast. He said he just absolutely loves the podcast.
Aww.
And he says he's a big fan, and he said that our music biopics episode was top-notch. So thank you very much for those kind words, Gordon, and thank you so much for your support and your coffee this week.
Yeah, and I don't mean to overemphasize it, but I really appreciate that feedback, Gordon, because when we do something slightly different, and by the way, it was entirely Andrew's effort that like organized that biopics one, nothing to do with me, but when we do try something different, it's nice to know that you know, people liked it, because otherwise it's kind of scary doing something new, isn't it, really? So you want folk to say that was actually good. So it felt good when we did it. I'm glad we did it, and hopefully we'll do some other similar things as time goes on.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Shall we get on with the LCD Sound System, which is our first track of the week, New Body Rumba. And am I right in saying they've also had a big gap between their last dose of new music and this? Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. Yep. So they've been doing a lot of kind of live dates, and I think there's been some remix albums and session albums and things like that. But yeah, this is the first new music in quite some time.
Okay. Well, without further ado, let's listen to it. Here we go. All right, so that was LCD sound system with the new body rumba. And we, in retrospect, we probably should have warned people that it's really long. It's seven and a half minutes.
It is. It's a long one. I don't know if I want to kind of give back my thoughts immediately, but yeah, I don't know if it kind of earns that length necessarily. Mm. Is something that I might say, but yeah. But yeah, I think there is some merit to this track all the same. And as we were saying before the track, it's the first new music in some time from LCD Sound System. So I think most listeners to the show probably do know who they are. Mm-hmm. But for those of you that maybe don't know, they are a dance rock project from Brooklyn, New York. And they've been going since the early 2000s, on and off. Formed and led by James Murphy. And yeah, what's your kind of history with the group? Are they a group that you've liked in the past? Or?
I actually just have one very small piece of history with them, which was being pleasantly muzzy at a music festival a long time ago, I think 2006 or 7, and then being like main stage, main act on one of the big nights, like Saturday night or whatever, and just having an absolutely great time listening to them. But neither before or since have I really ever listened to LCD Sound System except in passing. So no, I'm not. I don't know if that makes me a good candidate to listen to this or not, to be honest. But I feel like we have divergent feelings about this one, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have been a big fan in the past. Like, I absolutely loved the kind of debut track "Losing My Edge" when it came out in 2002. I just thought it was such a kind of funny, smart, super cool track. Also kind of served as a listening list for me at the time. You know, I was kind of a teenager and I was just referencing all these cool bands from the past and I just kind of hoovered all that stuff up. And, you know, it was a record about records made by a world-weary hipster. So it's little wonder that the kind of grizzled music journalist at the time just absolutely lapped it up as well. They did really become a kind of music writer's band for a long time. And that track kind of felt like a one-off at the time. It felt like it had a kind of whiff of the one-hit wonder about it. It was a bit kind of novelty almost. Mm-hmm. But then you realise that they actually had loads more where that came from. And James Murphy had been a big record collector and a big DJ in the past. And he was able to kind of construct these tracks and construct these albums that played like dance sets. You know, they had a real kind of momentum to them and a real kind of fall and build to them. That works really well. I think their second LP, Sound of Silver, is just one of the true classics of the noughties. I just love that record. Mm-hmm. I love the story behind it of him covering the studio in silver fabric and tinfoil to get a particular sound. And it does actually sound like silver. It's got this kind of like quicksilver synthesis to it of like post-punk and dance funk, and it's just a fantastic record. And the songs in that album that really meant a lot to me and my mates at the time, you know, songs like Get Innocuous, Someone Great, in particular All My Friends, they just soundtrack nights out, soundtrack parties, even soundtrack weddings that we've had. So yeah, I mean that album meant a lot to me, and I enjoyed the follow-up as well, This Is Happening, even though it kind of felt like some of the tunes leaned a little too heavily and too obviously on the influences of people like Bowie and Iggy. And then Murphy announced that he was going to call it a day. So he said that he kind of felt funny about being in a band in his middle age and that he kind of felt like he'd taken the project as far as he could. Mm-hmm. They announced a farewell show at Madison Square Garden, which then became this kind of lavishly packaged, lavishly expensive 5-disc box set that fans lapped up, and there was a concert film that me and my mates went to see at the GFT. And that just felt like the kind of perfect farewell for the group. And then less than 5 years later, they announced that they were getting back together. And I know bands get back together all the time. And I know it's a stupid thing to get kind of up in arms about, but I was really, really angry when they got back together. I just felt like it was just a total fleecing of the fans. And yeah, I realised there was loads of people that were kind of happy to see them back together and maybe had missed them the first time round and that kind of thing. But yeah, it just felt such an incredibly cynical thing to do. It felt like they were fleecing the fans that had paid all that money to go and invested so much in those farewell shows. And then they were fleecing fans again with these kind of comeback shows and the promise of this new album that was coming. And yeah, just the whole thing has just had a kind of bitter taste since then, everything that they've done since, really. You know, listening to that, the album that they made, so they had the fourth album came out in 2017, and listening with that mindset, it just made for really depressing listening. So you had songs with titles like Tonight and How Do You Sleep, mm-hmm. that are kind of clear kind of nods to tracks from the past, which is something that they've always done. But now it just felt lazy. The musical debts paid to people like Suicide and Talking Heads now felt like blatant rip-offs. And rather than sounding like coolly detached, Murphy suddenly sounded really kind of tired and bored. And, you know, I just didn't get on with that album at all. Yeah. There's a track on that album called Change Your Mind. And the chorus, or there's lines in that track, and it goes, I've just got nothing left to say. I'm in no place to get it right. And I'm not dangerous now the way I used to be. I'm just too old for it now. At least that seems to be true. And I think he was trying to be ironic in the track, but it just kind of summed it up for me. You know, there's just something really kind of tired and cynical, as I say, about that album. Even the cover image, if you look at that album, it's called American Dream. If you look at the cover image, it's that kind of idea of, will this do? The whole thing's just got that kind of whiff about it to me.
Wow.
Having said that, a lot of people liked it. I think it was Mojo's album of the year. But, you know, who's to say why they may be connected with, you know, somebody middle-aged grumbling about depression, mortality and irrelevance, you know. But it kind of maybe struck a chord with some journals. But, yeah, so I've just had that kind of negativity about the group ever since. Having said that, with this track, this is probably the best thing that I've heard from them in a while. And it kind of seems to hark back to some of the tracks on the first album, the debut album, and some of the kind of early tracks that they had around that time. Something kind of things like Daft Punk Is Playing at My House and Give It Up. I quite enjoy the British backing vocals on it. Is that when they're going super, super, super? I quite enjoy that. It's kind of like B-52s almost. And I think the title makes me think of Free Girl Rumba by Wire as well. So I don't know if that's a kind of wee nod in there as well. So it's nothing really new for the group. And as I say, I don't think it really earns its near 8 minutes, but it's got a bit of vim to it. It's got a bit of vigor to it that they've kind of been lacking of late. And it's encouraged me to spend a bit of time with their back catalogue this week, which is something that I've not done in a while. So I think from that perspective, it's a success.
Wow. So I did not expect you to be that annoyed about LCD Sound System, to be honest. Like, did not see that coming. So you've clearly had a more in-depth experience with LCD Sound System than I have. I don't know. Something that maybe stopped me looking back to them was, in my mind, I just associated them with the early part of the noughties. And so it just never felt like a good time to go back, because things had sort of moved on musically since then, I felt. But yeah, see, when you were talking there and you were talking about fans being fleeced and all that sort of stuff, it really made me think about football, because people have been talking about that in football for years now, about ticket prices and costs of replica strips and all this sort of stuff. And I guess the flip side of what you're saying, when it comes to music, or when it comes to any hobby that people spend money on, really, anyway, is that we don't really have any social contract with these artists, I don't think. So, you know, if they put out a 5-disc exorbitant farewell set, nobody is forcing anyone to buy it. So, like, fans obviously buy it on the premise that it's the last record, I get that. Do you get the feeling like it wasn't their intention for that to be the last record, or do you think this is like kind of, because there is a bit of a backstory, but where this track has come from, this just hasn't come out of like, let's just get back in the studio and do more music. I think there is a bit of a kind of story behind it. But do you get the impression that it is totally cynical, or do you think it's just a kind of opportunistic thing?
Put it this way, the box set was called The Long Goodbye.
I don't think
get much more final than that, really.
I've not convinced you there at all, have I? I really haven't. About social contracts and all that, you're like,
no,
bullshit.
I know what you're saying. And yeah, you're right. I don't have to listen to it. I don't have to buy it. And I haven't really listened to it, and I haven't really bought it. But yeah, it just feels very kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
And it's not adding anything to the legacy, really. I don't think. Like, some people suggested at the time when that album, the American Dream album, came out, that he was facing his middle age, you know, head on kind of thing, and that was kind of interesting. But I think musically it was all kind of played out, really.
Yeah.
And even this track, it's kind of, there's nothing new here, really. It's a good version of what they've done before, but it's not really adding anything to the legacy, really, I wouldn't say.
Wow. I think I'll try and say positive things about this track, because I think there are bits of it that are good. And it's interesting, actually, that maybe I come to it from a non-fan point of view, actually, or lapsed fan or ex-fan or anything like that. Like, I'm looking to it fresh, and I liked the sort of punky, dancey feeling of it, and the track itself has come about, I believe, because they've been asked to record a track for Noah Baumbach's Netflix show White Noise, which is based on an absolutely inscrutable Don DeLillo novel of the same name. I don't know if you've ever tried to read Don DeLillo much in the past, Andrew, but it's one of those ones that when I finished, I think I read two or three of his novels, and when I finished reading the last one, I was like, right, that's loads of that now. Like, I can't do any more of that. Like, it seems really cool, and it seems really worthy, and it's got loads of praise from critics and stuff, but actually I just really struggled to make sense of it. And there's probably some sort of connection between that novel and this song a little bit. But I like the power and flexibility that they got out of basically garage rock and roll, because this is just sort of at some points drums and bass and a couple of guitars and singing over the top. I think there's some good acerbic lyrics on here about life in the 21st century, like, would you like to add a protein? Would you like to know my day rates? Which are kind of like quite bland pieces of verbiage that you might hear out of people on a daily basis. And about 5 minutes in, it kind of swirls and you get the cascade of kind of keyboards and synths. And it goes into kind of Joy Division territory in the last couple of minutes. And I have to say, the last section referencing Dylan Thomas, you know, Don't Go Into the Light, and, you know, it's like the Dylan Thomas poem. I found the final section quite affecting and quite powerful. I thought there was something to it. The length makes sense when you think that this is not, like, it's not really a single, it's from a soundtrack. Rather than, you know, I mean, if they were trying to release a radio play single to get on Spotify charts and so on, then probably this would be edited the way down to like 4 minutes, you would have thought. But it's got the 80s kind of like long player,
12 inch single mix
kind of vibe to it. I thought it's got that sound, it's based on an 80s novel. That's the kind of logic I was thinking of here. So I forgave it its length because it kind of made sense. But I struggled to tell you I loved this. I thought it was quite good, but I didn't love it, certainly. That's the LCD sound system placed well and truly in the bin. There we go. What do you think?
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm kidding.
But it's not going to go on my playlist anyway.
Well, there we go. So shall we move on and listen to our second new track of the week? Something that I suspect you're not going to have the same feelings about. I could be wrong, but I just don't think you will. What is this we're listening to?
This is a track by a project called Run Logan Run, and it's called Silver Afternoon, and this is the radio edit.
All right, here we go. So that is Run Logan Run with their track Silver Afternoon. And I've described this in my notes, Andrew, as beguiling, breedy, and satisfying. What do you see?
Yeah, I can see all those adjectives in there, absolutely. I mean, I love this. I do love it. If I was a bit negative about the first track, then I can only say nice things about this one. Just touches on so many things that appeal to me, just elements of psych in there, jazz, prog, cinematic trip-hop as well. Run Logan Run are a project that come out of Bristol's improvisational scene, and it's got all that kind of lovely Bristolian DNA in there. So it's got like post-punk of the band, the pop group, and it's got some dub in there as well, lots of jazz, skronk, sound system culture, Portishead noir in there as well. So just all those great things that I love. And I see them as kind of part of a scene that's kind of building up again in Bristol. That's called the Ishmael Ensemble and Tara Clerkin Trio as well, that are just excellent acts that I'd recommend people checking out. And yeah, as I say, this was the radio edit, so it's just under 4 minutes. There's actually a 9 minute version. If the LCD sound system track can't be,
I might
have pushed to get the full 9 minute version on, because it is something. It's really something. So yeah, I'm very positive about this project, and I love this track, and I'm really looking forward to the album as well. Yeah, so there's an album coming out. It's called, where is it? I've got a minute somewhere. Nature Will Take Care of You, it's called, and it's out very soon. So Run Logan Run are actually just it's a duo. So you've got Matt Brown, the drummer, and Andrew Neil Hayes is the saxophone player. And they brought on board some string players. There's a string quartet, there's a brass section. And on vocals there is somebody called Annie Gardner, who is on this track and is on quite a few others on the album as well, from what I can tell. She's the daughter of the guitarist Ricky Gardner, who played with Iggy and Bowie back in the day. So again, reference to them. But yeah, it's a really interesting project. And as I say, I'm really excited to hear the full album.
Right. Well, I'm going to make a reference here that I'm sure you're going to maybe at least agree is potentially there, because I thought the lovely double bass and the sloshy jazzy drums made me think of Amnesiac, you know, Radiohead. Did you get that as well?
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Yep. Like Pyramid Song. Or...
Yeah, something like very, very, very like Pyramid Song. Actually, that was right on the money, as ever, Andrew. Unerringly accurate, as always. Very good. So our listeners can get their bingo dollars out for that one. and even more so when the brass came out, that made me think of the National Anthem a little bit as well by Radiohead. Annie Gardner's vocal is like folky to some extent, and almost like detached. It's almost as if she's like emotionally like not there in some way. And I mean that in a good way. Obviously, that's the deliberate method of delivery. And I don't know, because the music is so emotive, and she seems like so detached and so kind of like mystical and so on over the top of it. I just thought it was a great combo. It's almost like an Eastern flavour in here. Something about the scales that are being played, particularly the strings, make you feel some sort of like mysticism over the whole thing. And my favourite thing about this song, weirdly enough, is the jazzy squonky scronky saxophone, which is not something I normally like. I know, I'm surprising myself with this. But I'll tell you why I like it. I like it because the rest of the track is so, really well organised and tightly organised, that you've got this one element that's just going like wild over the top. And it's epically wonky and jazzy, and it's like, it's almost as if the track is like a kind of, you know, like a landscape scene that's being painted, and this is like some sort of like crazy shooting star like spiraling all over the sky above it. Brilliant. Like, it's just an amazing piece of music. Like, it just makes you think in the best possible way, I think. And I wholeheartedly enjoyed it.
Brilliant, love it. Yeah, I mean, the way the strings kind of weave around the bass, and the way they kind of interact with each other, and then they become intertwined with each other, is really, really clever.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
And especially in the 9 minute version, it's got this expansiveness to it that's just stunning. It puts me a little bit in mind of that Bad Not Good track that we talked about back in the day as well. Signal from the Noise, it's just in terms of, just the epicness and the expansiveness, as I say, just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Cool. Well, let's not beat it to death. We've said we love it, so let's leave it at that. Like, I think that's a great piece of music. So, everyone going to catch that new record when it comes out. What was it? It's something Nature, wasn't it? What was the record?
Yeah, Nature Will Take Care of You.
Nature Will Take Care of You. Good. Right. So let's get ourselves on to Polyphia. I nearly said Polyphia as well, actually. Polyphia and their track called Playing Gods. Here we go. So that is Playing God by Polyphia. Andrew, tell us things about Polyphia, please, if you don't mind.
Okay, I shall. I must confess, I only very recently found out about Polyphia, although they've been going for quite a wee while.
They're quite back, yeah.
Had you heard of, you were familiar with them before, is that right?
Or... I was, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was
kind of... did you want me to say more than that? Because I just went, yes. Did you want me to say...
No, that's fine.
I'll touch on that when I'm telling you about the song.
Yes, so Polyphia are a primarily instrumental progressive rock act from Plano in Texas. So, yeah, primarily instrumental. They do have some vocals in some of the tracks. They were formed in 2010. And they became famous mainly online for putting up these videos of these kind of guitar playthroughs. So they're kind of like showing people how to play these particular tracks. And it was a lot of kind of classical guitar that they were doing with a lot of the early tracks. They became popular in the progressive metalcore scene. But I've always been very kind of open-minded when it comes to the styles of music that they're incorporating into their sound. So they're very kind of influenced by pop and rap music. One of the things that kind of drew me towards them, I was going through some tracks and some artists a couple of weeks ago, and I read that they were incorporating elements of trap, EDM, and flamenco into their progressive music. And I thought, well, I have to hear that, you know, to see what it's like. And I just thought it kind of led on quite nicely from us talking about fellow Texans, the Mars Volta, last week, because it's kind of got that kind of similar mix of prog and, yeah, like Spanish music and just some unexpected elements, I guess. And there's a kind of virtuosity to it that I was just very kind of keen to hear you talk about. Like, I was very keen to hear your thoughts on some of the instrumental prowess on this track.
Well, batten down the hatches, because here it comes. I will just go right out and say that I'm quite familiar with Polyphia, specifically the lead guitarist, Tim, who, because I don't know if you use YouTube Shorts, it's like the TikTok thing that's on the YouTube app, and you just, like, you watch, like, sort of minute-long and shorter videos. Mm-hmm. It's constantly recommended for me. Like, every time they do a short or someone does a short about them, it just pops up in my feeds constantly, because basically I like guitars. So I think the algorithm just says, oh, this is guitars. In fact, this is lots of guitars. In fact, this is too many guitars in some ways. the guy, Tim, just from an outside point of view, the lead guitarist, I mean, the prowess is like unreal. Yeah. I mean, when you actually have to watch this track being played. You actually do. It's the things that are being done on a guitar, and that's not actually fair to the drummer and the bass player, because they're also doing things on drums and bass that are probably equally impressive. But I mean, I tried to list some of the guitar techniques that are being used just on this track. So there's a little bit of body manipulation of the guitar. That's like literally bending the body of the guitar with your arms and just like getting tremolo out of the guitar by physically bending it, which you might not notice, but it's there. There's tapping, which is where you take your right hand and you touch the fretboard to make notes, so you can do an improbably high number of notes. There's sweep picking, there's harmonics and pinched harmonics, and then there's like some more kind of like simple things like tapping on the body of the guitar and but the main thing is not any of these individually, because these are all quite achievable techniques. The thing about the playing here is that these are combined like effortlessly and quickly into combinations that just seem impossible. Like, if you were ever to learn like even the first 5 seconds of this song on guitar, you'd be like, wow, that's amazing. And you'd try and play it and 9 times out of 10 screw it up, and once you get it right. But it just seems like he's just able to play things that are infinitely complex, absolutely perfectly, every single time. And you can play it live and all that sort of stuff. And the drums and the bass, I don't mean to minimise them, it's just because I'm a guitarist, I'm just drawn to this guitar playing. But here is the massive but, I just don't know why. Like, it just makes me go, so what? Right? And my notes just read like a series of weird disconnected rants that I was thinking as I was listening to this track. First of all, the album art or the single art for this song is truly awful, like truly an eyesore. If you've not seen it, Andrew, like, go and have a look. It's truly like horrible to look at. This is shockingly terrible. So there's that. That's one thing. Secondly, just because you can play this number of notes doesn't mean you should. Like, you know, does Jimi Hendrix play this number of notes? No. Does Jimmy Page? No. Does, you know, Django Reinhardt? No. Right? And there's a reason for that. There are players in the world, there's, you know, Malmsteen and Joe Satriani and Van Halen. There are people who can do this kind of thing, right? But even they don't do this. Like, even they don't do this number of notes for a reason. For a reason, right? Like Van Halen, if you think about it, Van Halen can do the number of notes per minute that are being done here, but Van Halen is also on like classic, massive pop hits that are actually objectively good songs that are just made better by like virtuoso guitar playing. This is just virtuoso guitar playing in search of a basic song. So it just doesn't mean anything to me, I don't think. It's just virtuoso playing for me with no soul. I just don't get the soul of it. And it's performative, I would say. It just does feel like something that just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. And that goes for all of them. They should all know better. About a minute and 40 into this track, I'm loath to go back to it, but I listened to it like 5 times. So a minute and 40 in, they go full Muzak right in the middle of this. And you never go full Muzak, obviously. It just becomes all like really bland and stuff. And then, as you say, there's like a sort of like metal-y kind of rhythm change after that. And I just don't know what is going on. It's like 57 ideas inside 3 minutes. And I really don't like this. Sorry. I've talked a lot. I don't know if I took you on a ride there, because I was like, oh, the guitar playing's like unbelievable and all that. And then I was like, but swift left turn, it's tuneless. So I just don't get it. Like, it's not for me, probably. But the algorithm thinks it is. So there we go. Ah, rant ends.
No, fair enough. I like elements of it, but yeah, as you say, there's just so many elements that it's hard to actually say whether actually I probably don't like the whole track. But yeah, I think that there's definitely elements there that I like, and I admire the ambition of it, and the fact that they are trying to combine these different things together is interesting.
I mean, to be fair, when you're trying...
You would be a good one to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought it in. I was actually surprised to see it. And not in a bad way. Like, I like thinking about stuff like this. But I'm all for people trying to push boundaries and genres and all that sort of stuff. But that doesn't always necessitate good music. Like, it doesn't always bring about like stuff that's great to listen to. And as we know, people who've broken ground on your music aren't always the best, you know, exponents of it. Sometimes people that come along 3 or 4, you know, big artists later that actually kind of take the elements and put them in somewhere. There's a lot of this track as well, where the guitar playing is so intricate and the sound is so like affected. You say to yourself, is that even a guitar? Is someone playing that on like keys, or is that like being generated by an AI or something? And see, when you're at the point where you're listening to a guitar player who's so good that it actually doesn't sound like they're playing guitar anymore, I don't know why you listen to a guitar player. I really don't. It almost sounds as well like the pause music from a like 90s Sega Saturn racing game as well. And that's a really strange reference, and the 4 people who get that reference might go, yeah, you're right, but it's just how it feels. Anyway, I can't talk about it any further. I can't. And the title. And lastly, the title. Playing God. As in, I am a playing God, or, you know, whatever. I'm not a fan of Olivia. But I love bringing it in, love chatting about it, obviously.
Good, yeah. They've just dropped another track. It's called Ego Death, and it's featuring Steve Vai, who's the Frank Zappa guitarist. He's played with all manner of people, from Whitesnake to Alice Cooper. So,
oh my god,
yeah. So it's
Horace McWhirter will be down to give them like most notes played in 10 seconds or something like that. But anyway, let's put a pin on that one, right, guys? So, As you are aware, normally we have 5 new music tracks. This week we've gone slimline, so we're going for 3. And what we're going to do now is we're going to move on to our now famous final section, which is where Andrew lets us listen to something from his personal record collection that is in some way connected to some of the music that we've listened to already. So I'm not going to waste too much time, Andrew. I'm going to fling straight over to you. What is the vinyl word this week?
Okay, yep. So the vinyl word for this week. So I was thinking of the Run Logan Run track, Silver Afternoons. And that got me thinking of the forward-facing 60s duo Silver Apples. There's also an LCD link there. So obviously Sound of Silver, Silver Apples. And Silver Apples were also from New York as well. So, you know, it all kind of ties up quite nicely. And Silver Apples weren't one of the many hip acts that were referenced by James Murphy on Losing My Edge, but I think it's safe to say that he's heard these guys and he's a fan of them.
Could have been.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I was kind of thinking of them as a kind of sci-fi Velvet Underground. Really, they've got that kind of droning aesthetic to them. A lot of the tracks are essentially kind of rockabilly songs that have been lathered in primitive electronics and delivered with a proto-punk attitude. So, I mean, this is like kind of nearly a full decade before Suicide were kind of doing a very kind of similar thing in the mid to late 70s. So, yeah, a very kind of pioneering group, I would say. Their secret weapon was an instrument called the Simeon that consisted of 9 audio oscillators and 86 manual controls. So the lead, it says here, the lead and rhythm oscillators were played with the hands, elbows, and knees, and the bass oscillators were played with the feet. So yeah, just all these oscillators going at once in the studio to create these kind of droning, primitive, as I say, sounds. So the 1968 debuts, the self-titled ones, the kind of the iconic record of the two that they made. It's got that kind of reflective silver apple cover, and it's got their signature track, which is called Oscillations. But for my money, the follow-up is the one that's the better record. It's called Contact. And yeah, it's just got kind of stronger production values to it. It's got more ambitious and diverse arrangements, and I really enjoy the record. And I've chosen to play this out this week with a track called I Have Known Love.
All right. Well, all that's left for us to do then is thank everyone for tuning in, and we shall see you down the road.
Yep, we'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
I've been imprisoned in the moon. I've been imprisoned in the moon. I have known love, and love is one. And I have learned what truth denies. I drank the teardrops from her eyes. I have learned what truth denies. I drank the teardrops from her eyes. And I surrendered. I surrendered much too soon. I have learned what truth denies. I never heard the warning voice. I never knew I had a choice. I never heard the warning voice. I never knew I had a choice. So I never wanted to return. I never. Sailed on the boat that flew when there was room to float. But I have sailed upon the boat that flew when there was room to float. And I drank out of the magic cup. I drank out of the magic cup. As I sailed upon the boat, and I have slept inside the ship. Circled by the lovely maid, and I have slept inside the shade. Encircled by the lovely maid, and I've kissed the face of dreams. Yes, I've kissed the face of dreams. I've slept inside the shade, and I have written on the glow that warms the sky. Sky, the rainbow. I've waited in its golden streams. I've waited in its golden streams. I have ridden on the globe, and I have. sun by sweet guitars. I've done some things that can't be done. I've done some things that can't be done. I've danced between the stars, and I have smiled inside the storm, reaching higher to be warm. And I have smiled inside the storm, reaching higher to keep warm. I've known love that love has won. I've known love that love has won. I have smiled inside the storm. I've buried my fingers upon the sun.
I knew it was coming, and yet still somehow I don't even know what's playing now. I better trip this up. Robo Hands. You know what Robo Hands is?